Before there was Coachella, and before Outside Lands, there was a thriving music festival on the Central Coast.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the 2016 Live Oak Music Festival.
And it's still going strong. This was Live Oak 2016, and it's how the festival has started for the previous 27 years, since the very beginning. Over those years, many stories and life-changing events, including marriages and career decisions, have happened at Live Oak. Today, we're sharing some of those stories, like this one from Karina Visart. Karina is deafblind and communicated with me with the help of her friend and interpreter, Robin.
I could feel a connection to it. I never thought growing up that I could experience stuff like that myself. I always just thought that music was something that was very boring. But after I started to feel that connection, it was interesting to me because I didn't realize that I could have that connection.
Back in 2001, Karina had one of those life-changing moments at Live Oak that touched many people beyond just her.
I think it was also like a moment of hope, too, and a hope and possibility. It's like, oh, I did not know this is possible, but look, it's possible. Here's somebody who cannot see or hear who can experience music.
We'll hear much more about this story later in this piece. But first, let's talk a bit about how Live Oak is an event that helps to shape somebody's life. A lot of young Live Oakies have been coming to the festival their entire lives. This is the case for musician Maya Burns. Maya is 17 and says that she's been attending Live Oak since before she was born. So when her mom was pregnant with her. Maya's father, Jimmy, was the first person to ever sell tie-dye at Live Oak and has been with the festival since the beginning. Maya is now almost an adult and performing in her own band. I met up with her backstage before her show to see how she was feeling.
I'm really excited. It's my first year on the Hot Licks stage with my own full set, so I'm psyched.
This is a big moment for Maya. She's been performing in the kids' talent show since she was 2.
It ended kind of sad because I sang my song, I was really happy, but there's a 2-minute limit to each act of the kids' show, and I wanted to keep going, you know. And so my mom literally had to, like, grab me by the diaper and pull me off. And I was like, what? This is my slot, you know. And so, yeah, I think that's my first memory here.
This was one of the moments that made Maya decide to become a musician.
Well, this will sound crazy, but I told my parents when I was 3 that I was a singer and that's what I was going to do. And they kind of went, oh yeah, sure, and you'll be a fairy princess, and you know, all the things little kids say.
Because of Live Oak, Maya fell in love with music and performing. And today, she travels with her family to perform at festivals all over the country.
So this is Panama 66.
I asked Maya what her favorite part of the set was.
I think it's that moment right after the last song when you realize that it happened. Like, and you can just go, oh, that's my favorite part of the set. And, well, during the performance, I love to look out at people, but that moment when the set ends and you look out and you're sharing that moment with everyone and you can see everyone, you're not like focusing on whatever you're doing, you can just look at them and they look at you and there's this beautiful exchange that happens. And yeah, that was definitely my favorite part today. I got a standing ovation, which was incredible. I didn't even realize it at first. I was like so overwhelmed with the emotion of it. And then I went, oh my God, they're all standing. And then the guitarist turns to me and goes, bow, bow. And I go, oh, yeah, that's right. Like, I was just stunned. It was so much fun.
If you want to hear more from Maya, visit our website at kcbx.org, where you can find a more in-depth interview. Through this jazz-loving wonderland.
I am Dwayne English. My relation to Live Oak is I was one of the founders. There were many. I worked as backstage manager for 10 years and as director for 2. And possibly the 12 finest years of my life.
So this guy, Dwayne, is the father of all this, Live Oak. So here's how this baby was born. About 30 years ago, he and a few others at KCBX Public Radio met at a cafe in San Luis Obispo. And KCBX's music director at the time, Chris O'Connell, said that he wanted to make
a music festival that would reflect the programming of public radio, in particular of KCBX Public Radio. I don't think there was even a moment's hesitation. We all looked at each other and said, let's do it.
So Dwayne and Chris got to work. They got a bunch of people together, and in the end, they made a baby music festival.
And that's how the first one-day music festival, kind of a, we call it a festival with training wheels, occurred at Biddle Park in Arroyo Grande. And it was a wild success with all 532 people that showed up.
And the success of the first Live Oak made them think big. So they got a bigger location and more days. People even started camping during the different days of the festival.
And here we are, 28 years later, and it's still going strong. And I think what really made it special, what we realized immediately, is that it's not just the music. It's the community that surrounds that music that makes an event like this so very special. And you know, it's the musicians, it's the volunteers, and it's the audience, and it's the three of us working together, this three-legged stool. And it's this type of thing that really catalyzes, you know, what we're doing. It just makes everybody come together quicker, faster, and happier.
This three-legged stool that Dwayne is talking about is the heart of the festival. It's the musicians, volunteers, and the audience. This community of Live Oakies who get together once a year to celebrate a love of music. Despite all the changes over the years, Live Oak's core mission has remained the same, to form a tight-knit community centered around great music.
There are camps where they don't even make it up to the music at the main stage because they are enjoying each other's company so much. It's what neighborhoods used to be. You know, when you didn't have air conditioning, when you didn't have TVs, people were always outside socializing, interacting, mixing. There'd be block parties that would bring the community together. Well, Live Oak serves that purpose now in many ways. It gives the opportunity for people to simply spend time with each other away from the routines of, you know, the workday, theoretically away from technology. People are really looking each other in the eye and having a good time just being with each other.
Both of Dwayne's children, Bayla and Aaron, grew up in this neighborhood of music festivals. In fact, Dwayne suspects that some of their first memories are of playing in the campgrounds at Live Oak.
And to see Aaron, you know, continue to be enriched and to continue to be involved in the level that she is as a musician, I can't begin to say how happy I am to see that. And I also feel as happy for any Live Oak baby, and there's been many, that I've watched grow up over the last 3 decades. It's extremely rewarding. It's incredible.
I caught up with Erin at her campsite at this year's Live Oak. You can tell that the festival had a definite influence on her life. She obviously has an artist's soul, and clearly she's been nurtured and influenced by a slew of Live Oak aunts and uncles who watched her grow up. They've been there for all of the major milestones in her life, including the day before our chat together, when she married a man she had met at Live Oak 17 years earlier. Aaron welcomed me with iced tea and hugs.
I'm so glad you're here. Welcome to your first Live Oak. Really, this is
that's just the kind of person she is. Warm and inviting. And someone you can imagine becoming friends with after talking for just an hour. Erin's campsite seemed really homey. Potted plants and lawn chairs outside her camper. Live Oak has had a huge impact on Erin's life. She's grown and changed over the years alongside the festival. It has, based on her own statements, shaped her into the person she is today. It is the scene of some of her most precious memories and life-changing events.
And so it's way more than just an event. I've seen a lot of people, you know, I mean, I can speak from my experience, like I've chosen my career path. I've, you know, planned my trips and my traveling and my work around Live Oak. So I think that's an indicator of how it impacts one life. But I've also been able to watch how it impacts other people as well.
Today, Erin works as a professional musician. She's been touring for a few years now, singing and playing banjo across the country.
Mountain and back down to the sea.
Her husband Rylan travels with her on her tours.
She tours about 2 to 6 months out of the year, and I join her on the road and help with aspects from, you know, tour management to technical sound and show aspects.
Rylan also has deep roots with the festival.
So I was at the first one at Biddle Park. I've been to most of them by far.
Like Erin, he has chosen his career path because of Live Oak.
I think I was a little bit of a weird kid. You know, I was always into moving parts. As a kid, I remember going to yard sales and buying VCRs or whatever. And I'd take it home and take it apart with my little toolkit and try to figure out how it all worked. When I was very, very young, I guess we were driving down the road and I got very excited looking out the windows and was pointing at something, and my mom was looking out at this field and looking for birds and cows and whatever. And, you know, I'm going, looking, I'm going, look, 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 sprinklers. And so I was always fascinated by things that move. And I'm sure that part of my career path was always going to be something mechanical or technical. And it ended up being sound.
Rylan found this passion for sound at Live Oak because his dad didn't want to pay for his ticket.
But they used to let kids into the festival for free up to a certain age. Maybe it was 10 or maybe it was 12. And somehow my dad managed to talk my way through the gate when I was 13, we'll say. And it was a big hassle because I didn't have a ticket. And he looked at me, said, "Next year you're working."
And so the next year, Rylan was put on a sound crew.
It started out, wrapping mic cables and stuff, but it was fun. It felt like I was part of, you know, something bigger than myself. And I was always really into music and really enjoyed being a part of the process. And I really think, you know, that you really, in the sound industry, you accomplish things that you could not accomplish by yourself. And so it's fun to be part of that team.
And he's still part of that team today.
I mean, he's, 32 now. He's been working as a sound engineer since he was 10 because of Live Oak. And he's really good at what he does constantly. Like every time he goes and does sound at gigs, people are like, "Wow, you're really good." And that's only because he was able to have this opportunity.
Besides their careers, Live Oak is the set of Erin and Rylan's love story. They actually got married at Live Oak the day before I talked to them.
But we had to get married here because up at the campfire ring up by the Hot Lick stage, that's where I met Rye, up there hanging out late at night.
And I was a pretty shy, awkward kid. I wasn't very comfortable with meeting girls. It was quite a big deal for me to meet a girl around the campfire.
They exchanged phone numbers, and then they started hanging out. They were an on-and-off-again couple for a few years, but they always remained friends. And now they're married.
It was magic. It was a magic moment. It was just really intimate, just a few people, but just being able, to step out of my RV, like how white trash and perfect is that, right? I'm like putting on my wedding dress, sewn out of t-shirt cotton. I was like sewing the hem in there an hour before. Swing the door open of my RV, step out to the most joyful moment of my life. It was perfect. I wouldn't have wanted it any other way. I was so happy. And like, you know, walk across the dirt here and get married.
I walk along the road.
You don't necessarily have to have intention when you come to Live Oak, but it's unavoidable to walk away without a life-changing experience, I think.
Well, it comes full circle because my dad was here yesterday watching his daughter get married at the festival that he founded. It was supposed to be a secret wedding, so shh. That's okay. It was only secret because we set a date for October later this year, and I didn't even tell my best friend, but that's okay. She'll understand. It's Live Oak.
Looking for the beat.
This is a place where you can let your kids go off and be humans and be people in a really safe communal environment. And, you know, I was 15 at the time and it was perfectly acceptable for kids to just be out hanging out by a campfire. I'm sure my parents, you know, were thrilled when I brought home my new boyfriend who had a green trihawk. A 6-inch green trihawk. He's a keeper. Only Live Oak.
And if you're wondering, a trihawk is like a mohawk haircut, only with 3 stripes instead of just 1. I had to Google it myself.
And why do you think you guys decided to get married at Live Oak?
For a lot of reasons. It's a place that is, you know, sentimental to us. It was also important for us to make the wedding ceremony feel good. You know, both of us, I think, coming from event backgrounds, you know, her as a musician and me on the technical side of things, I don't think it felt right for our wedding to be an event. And so I think Live Oak fit the bill, and it was just a really nice, nice, quiet, intimate experience for us.
If you want to hear more from Aaron, along with an original song, visit our website at kcbx.org. You're listening to Issues and Ideas here on KCBX. Today, we're talking about some of the life-changing moments that have occurred at the Live Oak Music Festival, so stay tuned. When I started this piece, I kept asking people, hey, what's a moment that just says Live Oak to you? And people kept talking about this girl and Janice Ian. I'll let KCBX program director Marisa Weidel take it from here, because she was there.
After the Janice Ian performance on the main stage, I went back to the CD booth where the performers come out and sign CDs and shake people's hands and talk to fans. And when I got back there, there was a pretty big crowd of people already. And Janice Ian was singing to this young woman.
That young woman was Karina, the girl we met at the beginning of this program. Remember, she is deafblind, and she was 16 when all this happened. Oh, and also she's Rylan's sister.
I could just see the inspiration on everyone's face, and I actually felt kind of awed and inspired as well, because here was something before us that we'd never seen before, somebody experiencing music in a way that we didn't even know was possible. And clearly it was an important moment for both this young woman, Karina, and Janice Ian, just because you could see it in the looks in their faces. It was a meaningful moment.
But to really understand what makes this experience so special, we need to first learn a little more about the woman, then girl, at the heart of the story. So we're going to be talking about Karina mainly in terms of her deafblindness. And while that's a big part of her identity, there's a lot more to her than just that. I think Rylan says it best, so I'll let him take it from here.
My sister is certainly an inspiring person in many ways. She's persevered and figured out how to accomplish the things that she wanted to accomplish, from cheerleading and jazz and ballet dance to world travel and etc. She's always found a way, and so I think it's inspiring for people to see somebody living their life in spite of what many people would see as, you know, hardship. And I think it's inspiring for people to see that.
Okay, let's get back to the story now. Karina's mother, Pearl, noticed there was something different about Karina when she was very young.
You know, Karina is deafblind, and being deafblind is not deaf plus blind, as in 1 + 1 = 2. It's really just a completely different thing. So, you know, a person who's blind, of course, can hear, and a person who's deaf can see.
While a person who is deafblind has to rely on a whole different set of senses in order to navigate the world. Growing up deafblind, Karina never really thought that music would play that big a role in her life. But all that changed when she was 15. Here she is again with her interpreter, Robin, whose voice we hear.
So I sat in the corner at first, and I was just reading. But then suddenly, I noticed something. I heard like a note, but it was weird because I'm deaf and I can't hear. So I was really curious about what that sound was or what it was that I had experienced, and I looked up.
Jora Landis was playing flute, and she hit a note, and she picked up, and Jora and I both saw that. And then she kept playing, and then another time, Karina picked her head up, and we were like, she heard that.
A friend of my mother's looked over and noticed that I was looking to try to figure out the sound. And so she approached me with a flute she was playing, and she set the flute kind of on my shoulder.
And Karina's face, I mean, she was just like, she was just opening up, like, oh my gosh. And everybody, I mean, it was obvious.
And so that was when I realized that I could feel it and I could experience music and that there was a way for me to experience. And so then other people in the room started letting me feel their instruments as they were playing.
And then at one point, Karina was sitting with Jora and they kind of shifted it and she did a real bluesy song and Karina had her hand. And Karina just, she looked and she said, that's different. And I, at that point, I had like a tear and I said, that's the blues. And then Karina looked at me and she goes, Mom, music is cool. And at that point, you know, there were a few tears down Jora's and my cheeks.
So if you didn't catch it, Karina was able to experience the music by feeling the vibrations that the instruments gave off. After Pearl realized that Karina actually had a way to experience music, she made it her mission to give her access to it. Unlike most of us, Karina doesn't have the ability to pop in a CD or plug in an iPod. Instead, she relies on a level of accessibility that can be hard to come by outside of friends and family. And so back in 2001, when Karina was just starting to explore this world of music, Pearl was always on the lookout for musicians who seemed approachable.
And we were kind of both at this time when we were trying things to see what worked. And so I kind of have a feeling like when people are receptive or if they want to talk or whatever. And so I think that somehow when we were walking out, Janice must have been standing like right next to me or something. And I wanted Karina to have variety and choice and to realize that, you know, there's different voices and calibers and all that out there. So I just asked her, and she just said yes.
And so Janice took Karina's hands, put them on her throat, and then, in front of everybody, serenaded her.
And I can't really describe to you how it felt, because I don't remember that, but I just remember feeling fascinated watching her sing, and, you know, it's such a cool experience when people are willing to let me feel their throat while they're singing. I also at that time happened to have an interpreter that was close by, and that interpreter was able to come interpret the words to the song, which was very cool. The song that she did was Amazing Grace.
Amazing Grace, how sweet the sound.
The thing that I love about this story is that it's about such an intimate moment that was really shared with everybody. We experience music on such a deep emotional and private level. And so in that moment, when we're seeing Karina experience music through Janicean, through her fingertips and the vibrations, we're experiencing it with her. We get the emotional impact that most people go through in their head, and it's out there for everyone to see.
'Twas grace that laid my heart.
I was initially really surprised that both Pearl and Karina seemed to barely remember this life event that had touched so many other people. Pearl later explained to me that since the experience was so spontaneous, it all happened very quickly. Because of this, Crean was missing a lot of contextual information. As a deafblind person, she needs environmental and social context in order to fully absorb what's happening.
And I think what happened with Janice Ian, I have to, with all due respect, I have to say I'm kind of like Karina. I don't have a real vivid memory of that. But I think that what happened was that that was probably around the time that this whole realization came about that Karina could and in fact did enjoy music.
To Pearl and Karina, it wasn't necessarily about that one moment with Janice Ian. It was more about how the moment fit into the larger discovery of music.
And when we first began.
A lot of time has passed since Karina first discovered she could experience music. Since then, Karina has continued to explore different kinds of sounds in which vibrations feel good to her. Here's her brother, Ryland, again.
It's always been really interesting to watch her experience music and to see the joy that she gets out of it. You know, while the point is not to put her on display, it is probably neat for people to get a chance to see somebody experiencing something in a different way.
Karina has really embraced it, and she's learned what works for her and what doesn't. For example, she doesn't really like electronic music. The vibrations just don't feel right. And so instead, she seeks out acoustic music. Her sister-in-law, Erin English, has been especially helpful in this area. She's even teaching Karina how to sing.
I know that I enjoy singing myself with my voice and kind of playing with the different pitches and the highs and the lows and the way that that feels in my throat. I never thought growing up that I could experience stuff like that myself. I'm deaf, but I can speak and I do try. Erin was actually teaching me how to sing by letting me touch her throat while I touched mine and try to match the vibrations in our throats. It's very difficult to follow her because I'm deaf, but it's fun. Erin thinks that I'd be a great rap artist.
The whole time I've been working on Karina's story, I feel like I've been chasing this one question. What is it about this moment that makes it stick in people's minds all these years later?
I think that people in general are searching for inspiration. And my sister is certainly an inspiring person.
Well, gosh, for any of us, I mean, if you're standing in a crowd and this just incredibly talented singer stands there right in front of you unexpectedly and just belts out this moving rendition of Amazing Grace, I mean, yes, that's a very memorable experience. I think we'd all remember something like that. And then I'm sure that the image of Karina standing there with her created, you know, a unique and special and memorable experience for the community of people that were standing there and had the opportunity to share it.
You could see it in the looks in their faces. It was a meaningful moment.
Do you think that's why people have remembered it all these years later?
I think so. That's the first, actually, it's the only time I think that I've ever seen anyone experiencing music that way. I think it was also like a moment of hope, too, and a hope and possibility. It's like, oh, I did not know this is possible, but look, it's possible. Here's somebody who cannot see or hear who can experience music. It was, it expressed possibility in the world around us.
And I really think that that's a big part of it. In that moment, people who witnessed this exchange felt connected to something bigger than themselves. They were suddenly part of this girl's life's journey, and she was part of theirs. And that's kind of the essence of Live Oak. To people all across the Central Coast, the festival represents the possibility of what community can be. It gives people an opportunity to connect, really, truly connect, with people they otherwise wouldn't get an opportunity to. And in this world, where intimate human connection is harder and harder to come by, this opportunity is precious. I spent 3 days at the festival. Because of this, I have a lot of great audio from jam sessions and interviews that just didn't fit into this piece. So make sure to go onto kcbx.org to find more. For KCBX, I'm Rebecca Nolan.